Hello and welcome to Temporal Culture War, where we dig into what the hell was going on in America in the early 2000s while we watch one of television history's most maligned properties, Star Trek Enterprise. I am Clayton Ashley.
And I am Maddie Lipchansky.
We're here for
forceful today.
I'm trying to be. It's something new.
We're with fucking vigor and vim. Piss and vinegar.
Mm-hmm. Here in Donnie's New York.
Here in folks, this is the first recording we're doing since Islamofascism. Sorry, strike that.
Islamocommunism.
Islamocommunism has taken hold.
It's episode 2 of season 2, not episode 2. I have that written wrong. It's episode 4 of season 2 of Enterprise, Dead Stop, and it aired October 9th, 2002. And we are going to talk the hell out of it because I don't want to get into it right now too much, but I like this episode.
I thought this episode was pretty good, Clayton. The whole time I'm watching it, I was kind of like, is this happening?
Where did this come from?
Is this episode?
Who made this show?
Is this episode?
But first, I have to bring down whatever this vibe is because of the news. There was a French oil tanker on October 6th that exploded. It was a terrorist attack. Not great.
Oh, not great.
More depressing, the Israeli-Palestinian conflict. There was a village in the West Bank. Jewish settlers fired upon Palestinians picking olives. They killed someone, wounded another. Yeah. So, of course, the Israeli soldiers shoot someone else dead. But that is claimed to be an Islamic jihad gunman. I'm not sure what that means in Wikipedia, but
like the group Islamic Jihad,
huh?
Like the group Islamic Jihad, or
I think this actually might be two separate things. There is also a gun battle in the Jenin refugee camp because it's not just one place.
Okay.
And then a couple days later, on Monday, actually a day later on Monday, there is also an Israeli troop raid in the Gaza Strip. They kill 13, wound many more, up to 100. And there's also a rocket fired into a Jewish settlement in the area. There's also a kidnapping of the chief of the Palestinian riot police. So by Palestinians. So there's a lot going on during this era.
Yeah, it's not great.
It's not great. I don't know what else there is to add about that.
Yeah, a sad and weird time. Not like now.
No.
I think there's it's interesting going through this news stuff now because I feel like it just wasn't getting the coverage in the American press contemporaneously because we were so up our own assholes with like Iraq and Afghanistan stuff.
Yeah, which is exactly what I was going to talk about next. That's what I was thinking, is it's sort of like a lot was going on. How important it was to Americans at the time was, however important it ever is less so at this time because of what's happening with Bush, who on that Monday gave a big speech outlining the Iraqi threat. Fox News broadcasted it. Not many of the other network channels did. But this is like the lead up. I think you'll get into this on the next episode. We're going to have a vote later this week. It's escalating. The thing I noted about this, though, is that he gave this speech from the objectively gorgeous Cincinnati Union Terminal. And that is the Art Deco train terminal.
It's the full name. The full name of the station is the... It's the gorgeous Cincinnati Union.
Gorgeous, yeah. But it's the Justice League headquarters, like that's what you probably think of it as, because literally the Hanna-Barbera cartoonist like based it on this building.
What? Okay, I'm looking at it now. Objectively gorgeous, you said?
Yeah,
that is objectively gorgeous,
right?
God damn, we used to be. Sorry, not to.
Yeah.
On our like anti-nostalgia podcast, we used to be a country. Yeah.
I think this was like FDR era. Moses. You can be kind of proud of that. It's allowed.
The aerial view is very like fucking H.R. Giger, though. There's like a black, if you Google it, like image search, there's a black and white aerial shot and it looks extremely like fucking Seleucia Secundus. Like,
oh, you're right.
It's crazy.
Strange. Huh?
Yeah. This is where every black and white photo
is going in and out. So
I guess any black and white photo of anything Art Deco looks like a fucking xenomorph lives there, I guess. Huh? Well, That's a fun little game I've discovered for myself, yep. Which is take a nice photo of an Art Deco thing, make it black and white.
Harsh black and
see
white.
See if my friend the Xenomorph, lives there. My friend and yours, canonically trans character, the Xenomorph.
Now, we've talked about how some people around the world were not having a great time, but did you consider the people on the stock market and the stock exchanges? Because they weren't having a good time either.
Well, Clayton, I don't consider them people, but proceed.
The NASDAQ, Dow Jones, S&P, they all fell to levels not seen since the mid-90s.
Oh, boy. You hate hearing
bad,
not
bad
seen.
Day, bad Monday.
Yeah, you hate. They called it Bad Monday. You hate to see a phrase like not seen since X year when talking about the stock market. It's almost never good. Now you keep seeing the phrase since 2007 appearing a lot in economic news.
I have actually seen an uptick in that.
Is that good? They're saying it's the most mentions of the year 2007 since the year 2007.
Oof, big oof.
Huge oof. Oofs.
In good-ish news, the EU announces 10 countries will soon be added. This is like Woo! The biggest change since 1995 when Sweden joined. Cyprus, Czech Republic, Estonia, Hungary, Latvia, Lithuania, Malta, Poland, Slovakia, and Slovenia. They actually don't officially
join. Give it up
like
for the
join.
Baltics, baby! Yeah.
Yeah. Cool. Until 2004, but this is when it was announced, and that was kind of a big deal. It was practically doubling the size of the EU.
Yeah.
At least in terms of numbers, but of countries. I don't think the population of these countries quite matches what was already there, but
yeah,
still.
We don't respect Estonia as a podcast.
Which country? I think it was Slovenia that I was just talking to somebody at a party, and they were just like, it's secretly one of the most gorgeous countries on the earth. Like, it's
That's
just these
not
rolling hills.
Shocking to me. They have you know what's really good in Slovenia? Mm-hmm. Is the wine.
Oh.
Slovenian wine, my friends, is both delicious and a value proposition because it's almost the same exact wine producing region as like Northeast Italy, but it's on the other side of the border and doesn't have that prestige of Italian wine. So you can get it for a lot cheaper, and it's really fucking good. Plus,
it's all about the dirt it's grown in. I mean,
it's all about that dirt, baby, as we all know.
Terroir?
Yeah, the terroir, as the French say. And a fun thing about Slovenian is one of those languages where it looks like you can read it, but you can't. So you get to have a fun time trying to pronounce the names of the producers and the grapes. So
that's
just
great.
That's a little wine corner tip.
I love
from
that.
From your friend, Maddie. I'm not going to make you play a stinger because I know that means you have to go find a stinger. But if you want to,
appreciate
like,
it.
Yeah.
Future Clayton appreciates it.
I just said, wine corner. There. I did it.
Oh, that's good. I'm going to clip that out. I could
very
that.
Close to the Yahoo stinger. Yeah. All right.
Well, on that musical note, we'll talk about 2002. What did I break this out into? Bottom of the top 100. Some new notables.
Okay.
Pearl Jam's I Am Mine.
Oh, sure.
That's the era.
Classic tune.
Did you recognize this? I didn't want to look into it because I want to be surprised. The Ketchup song in parentheses, Hey Ha by Lost Ketchup.
The Ketchup Anything? Song. The Ketchup song, parentheses, Hey Ha?
Hey, H-E, oh yeah. Ooh.
I've never heard of this. I might listen to it right now.
Yeah, I'm going to do it too.
Oh, it's a Spanish group called Lost Ketchup.
Oh, good for them. I think this was like in the 70s. So breaking through to the Billboard Hot 100.
Oh, this song. I know this song. Yes.
Oh, now, okay. You do recognize it. All right.
Yeah, this fucking rocks. Oh my God. This is really good. If you're stop the episode right now.
Okay. I did skip ahead to the chorus, and I do feel like I've heard this somewhere in the back
exactly.
of my mind.
So go, stop listening right now. Pause the show. Go Pause look it. Up the Ketchup song. Listen to the whole thing and watch the video where you get to see some cool bell-bottom jeans. Now come back. No, stop. Welcome back to the show. Is your life changed? Because mine is from listening to the Ketchup song. Is your life changed, Clayton?
I'm glad I saved
from
it
remembering
right now
the Ketchup song.
It brought me back up.
I was having kind of a down day. My life is a little discombobulated at the moment, personally, for some reasons I won't get into on my Star Trek show. But, however,
but we have the Ketchup song now.
But now I am peaking emotionally. this is we're recording on a Friday afternoon right now. This is going to take me through the weekend, mm-hmm. into the moon, into the stars, and beyond. To beyond time and space and human understanding. I'm emotionally experiencing a sort of 2001 A Space Odyssey.
I feel like you're setting me up. All I can do is bring you down now.
Yeah, that's true. Take me back to Puddle of Mud.
Puddle of Mud. She hates me.
Put me in the mud, baby. Let's go.
Also, not she much better. She fucking
hates me. Worse. Bad song. Yeah. Song that sucks. Like that's a real emblematic of like how poisonous culture was at the moment. This is like, this is why we do the show, is to think about a Puddle of Mud. She hates me. Just like aesthetically garbage.
Yeah.
Just like everything about it is like hateful and like snide and mean and weird, like misogynistic, I think. And just like the sound of it is bad. Like it feels mm-hmm. bad in your, it takes, if the Ketchup song has got me up emotionally, thinking about Puddle of Mud, She Fucking Hates Me, has got me in like Dante's Circle of Hell. Dante had not even figured out existed. Like it's just
two ends of the same spectrum. It's
those are the we've actually put all of human emotion between the Ketchup song by Lost Ketchup and Puddle of Mud, She Hates Me, and every emotion, everything that you experience in the world can be charted between those two poles. Yeah.
Linearly. It's not even like a grid. It's just your...
No. It is not a grid. It is a full-on, like, it is a line. Just choose it. Yeah.
Where would a Ragtag Top by Tim McGraw sit?
That's down by Slipknot, I think. Or Slipknot, Puddle of Mud.
Yeah, I mean, same...
same. No, I got Slipknot out of the mind because they were a Learned League question the other day. Okay. And I pulled it out of my ass that the Slipknot that has the numbers on their jumpsuits and are from Iowa. But if you see me in Learned League, no, you didn't. No, you did not see me. You did not look up my scores. Puddle of Mud bat. Yeah, Tim McGraw on the Puddle of Mud side of the zero. That's at the exact center between that and Ketchup, I think.
Don't like the man.
No, I do not care for the man nor his music.
But going to some notable risers, these aren't near the top quite yet, but they are. It's noticeable how fast they're rising. Landslide by the Dixie Chicks.
Oh, yeah. By the Dixie Chicks. This is way before. It was still have not even gotten close to their Insult of George W. Bush.
But seeing them on here, I like felt this like pang of like, oh, yeah, that's going to happen.
They were ascendant. Those chicks.
And also, I think we mentioned this already, but Lost Yourself, I believe, hit the charts last week, and now just 2 weeks, it's at number 18. Like, it is rocketing.
Yeah, like Mom Spaghetti hurtling across the universe at heretofore unknown speeds, impacting Earth with a humongous shockwave.
It makes me sick. At the top, though, I mean, just, I guess, right under it, but still, they just kind of, like, jumped up there real close. Like I Love You by Justin Timberlake at 11.
Sure.
Boo.
Boo, Justin Timberlake. Boo, Justin Timberlake. For all the things you did, parentheses, except for your performance in the movie Inside Llewyn Davis, which I quite like. Aside from that, Justin,
and I kind of think he's a good scumbag in The Social Network.
Of course, he's very good in that movie, except for those two performances, Justin. I don't like.
Fuck you.
I'm like, yeah, fuck you, Justin Timberlake. Get out of here! I'm chasing him out of here with a broom. He's in the room with me, which is crazy. Hey, get back in there. Oh, sorry. Sorry, if you're just tuning into the show now. And you don't remember from the earlier episodes, I think I mentioned this at some point, but I do keep Justin Timberlake in an oubliette in my home, which is a sort of a hole, which is, you might say, Maddie, don't you live in an apartment? What do you think about the people below you? And yeah, there is a big cylinder of concrete coming out of my floor through their ceiling that takes up a lot of their apartment. They're like, what the hell is this? And I said, don't worry. It's just where I keep Justin Timberlake. And they said, okay, no worries. And then he tried to come out. He says, that's me. And I said, get back in your hole, Justin.
He only makes like sounds. He doesn't make that many sounds. It's not like a huge deal.
No, he's not allowed to talk. No, he's looking at me. No, Justin. Stay quiet. No? Do you want to eat later?
During the podcast, really?
Justin, you don't have a... Justin wants to be the third mic so bad, and he won't be. Get it? Like I said, make another Inside Llewyn Davis and we'll talk. He's saying that metatextually that performance is maybe more interesting than his actual performance, but I don't know. That's not necessarily true. What were you saying?
Actors.
A little loose and goosey today.
Oh, he's number 11. Number 12, Underneath It All, No Doubt.
Oh, good song. I kind of like the late No Doubt. Like before Stefani, who has never done anything problematic or bad or said anything weird. Well, right before she like fully left the group, I feel like that like late, like what is it, Saturn, Return of Saturn, and the other one. That era of No Doubt is not bad. At the time, I was, as a teenage punk, I was mad that they were no longer making ska music because I was an asshole, but now I'm a little more into it.
And it's because of an earlier episode that you explained to me what No Doubt was, and I listened to. I'm enjoying the later No Doubt, I guess, because that's where we're in. But I had no context for it. I came in completely new, and I don't know what's. It's fun.
It is fun. I do still prefer their earlier things, like your Tragic's Kingdom and the one before Tragic Kingdom with the checkerboard on. It's got like bees or something. I don't remember what it's called.
Right. You know, I'm not going to complain about ska. I mean,
back when her brother was in the band before he left No Doubt to become an animator on The Simpsons. True facts right? about No Doubt cool. that Maddie remembers forever. Burned into her brain for all time. What happened to Gwen Stefani's brother?
And then the last like new thing to hit the chart up at number eight, Work It. By Missy Elliott.
Okay. Maybe one of the best songs ever made.
I was like, is this probably one of the best songs we've talked about on the show at least? Like,
yeah, like it is. It's one of those songs where you're like, this could have come out last week and it would sound like it was coming out next week. Like, I just don't like what a fucking song. I love Missy so much. I think this song is also incredible. I don't know. It's just like, what an achievement this fucking tune is.
There's something about it that it feels like you could say it's modern or it's like ahead of its time, but it's almost even like out of time. Like there's something about it that it doesn't. Yeah.
I put it in a little bin in my brain that I also keep for the Outkast album Stankonia, where it feels like you could drop this. Like it just feels like it's in a different dimension than the rest of us, and you could reach out and grab it at any point in history and it would fit in. And it would feel like it was the next thing that was about to happen to music. And it's, yeah.
I don't know. The music, we don't have as much to talk about, but there's something, this is one of those weeks where it's like, yeah, there was so much shit and also some real gold like, at this time. Yeah,
I would say Missy Elliott's Work It is coterminous with the Ketchup song on the...
Yes.
on the human enjoyment scale.
Go listen to one or both of those. You're going to have a great time.
Put them on. You know what? A little experiment. If you are listening to this and you want to listen to both at the same time and let me know how it sounds, I won't do it because I don't have the wherewithal or the knowledge of technology to do that. But if you can figure it out, I want you to do it. Don't send me the YouTube Doubler website or whatever. Just do it and tell me what it made you feel emotionally.
We just want your emotional response data.
send me like put on one of those like EKG crowns that has like all the leads on it and then map. Don't tell me any words, just like subject line, Ketchup plus Missy, and then just I want the graph
of
what your brain is doing, and I'm gonna take that to the lab because I'm working up a scientific method to evaluate human happiness.
Perfect. How about TV?
I'm out of my mind today, Clayton. I'm sorry. I'm off the chain today. It's fine.
Good news.
Good news.
Enterprise destroys the vile Dawson's Creek this time.
Yeah!
In every category, in ratings, 3.5 to 3.3.
They earned it with this good episode. 6 to 5
in the share, and 5.4 to 4.9 in viewers. Get wrecked.
Get fucked, Dawson, you little... bitch, you brat. I'll never go to your creek.
I think it was funny that the episode of Dawson's Creek this week was called The Importance of Being Dawson.
Okay, I think that show's in like season 8 or something at this point. I think it is maybe losing some steam.
Yeah, maybe.
The Importance of Being Dawson.
Not else much notable in TV. Regular My Wife, Kids, Ed, and 60 Minutes 2. Block, Power Hour. Destroys us, you know, whatever. But everybody was dealing with the Anamine Angels 6, Minnesota Twins, 3 in the ALCS.
Oh, sure. We're still in baseball playoff season.
It is baseball time.
It's baseball. What's the time? Baseball time.
Baseball time.
Yeah. We're talking baseball. This is a music. This is an all singing, all dancing episode of Temporal Culture War brought to you by Maddie was working on some music before.
I'll get us to the movies.
Yeah, take us to the movies, please.
All right. Going to go bottom to top. We got at 55 this week, Bloody Sunday. Paul Greengrass's film based on 1972 Bloody Sunday Massacre.
Sure. Paul Greengrass.
I said that pretty happy for what is unarguably a very terrible day.
Yeah, I mean, they don't really tend to put the word massacre in a phrase unless it's bad. That's just something I've learned in my 40 years on this planet. Is that that's what that word means?
This actual event, the movie is based on British soldiers shot on 26 unarmed civilians during a protest march, claiming 14 lives. At the time, a quick inquiry said that, you know, maybe it's a little harsh, but like they were being shot at and there were bombs. You know, a 2010 inquiry said, no, there was no bombs, completely unarmed civilians. Yeah. It was definitely a massacre. Much of the movie was filmed along the actual protest route in Derry.
Wow. Ireland. So this is the... Oh, I was forget that Paul Greengrass is not the Bourne guy. He comes on later. Mm-hmm. That's right. Sorry. I was like, wow, Bourne comes out the same year. Nope, I'm wrong.
Flight 93 going to be his next movie? I think it is.
Oh, is that him?
Yeah. I know that one's him.
Mm.
But this movie's great. I mean, it's a quality retelling of a terrible event.
Yeah. Is it shaky?
It is, but I remembered watching it. It felt appropriate.
Yeah. I mean, this is before the shaky cam gets completely out of control.
Yeah, I think Paul Greengrass, he's okay at it in a way that, like, others imitate it poorly.
Often imitated, never duplicated.
Yeah.
Much like, whose slogan is that? Hooters? The Hooters of film, Paul Greengrass. Put that in your pipe and smoke it. That's what I'm saying.
I will say I haven't seen it in a long time, so maybe it doesn't hold up. But I do remember when I watched it being like, yeah, damn, that's a movie.
Yeah. Okay.
Next, 44, Heaven. Now, this is one I did have...
Like the concept?
Had never heard of it. It's just called Heaven.
Okay.
But it doesn't sound like Heaven, this description. A woman takes the law into her own hands after police ignore her pleas to arrest the man responsible for her husband's death and finds herself not only under arrest for murder, but falling in love with an officer.
It's like Love Triangle Death Wish? Love Wish, they call it.
I was starting to watch some of the trailer and it felt... Some of the like markers of this era was like a strangely kind of sci-fi looking font for what is ostensibly just like a drama with, I mean, it's Cate Blanchett. So it's not like Nobody's, definitely, but it feels like a crime drama.
I feel like she's not that famous at this juncture.
That's fair. From the director of Run Lola Run.
Oh shit. I loved that movie at the time.
Yeah.
Who knows if it's any good. Giovanni Ribisi. Okay.
We got Gio in here.
Oh yeah, he looks like he's wearing a little he's the cop. He's the cop. Man, remember you'd get Giovanni Ribisi above the title in 2002. Oh yeah, Tom Twyker is the guy's name.
No, yeah, there we go.
Yeah. I'm familiar with the man. Cool.
Moving up to 39. Welcome to Collinwood.
Welcome to Collinwood?
Ring any bells?
Something is ringing in the deep back of my brain.
It's an American caper comedy film about some small-time thieves who are trying to pull off a jewelry store heist. Interesting thing about it.
Yes, I know about this because of the who directed it.
Yes, it's the Russo brothers. And not just the Russo brothers, but a bunch of like the actors in this are people who've appeared in Marvel movies, and kind of like the way you know that is that if you open this up in Wikipedia and start hovering over the different actors' names, they're all like Comic-Con photos, which is funny to me. William H. Macy, Isaiah Washington, Sam Rockwell, Luis Guzman, I think have all had one or multiple appearances in Marvel movies. So it's interesting that this completely not comic book movie at all had a bunch of this, like the Marvel industry in it. Yeah.
That is very funny. And then fucking George Clooney is there.
Yep, we got Clooney.
Gabriel Union. Damn.
Patricia Clarkson.
I like don't remember this movie existing at all, but I remember reading about it at one point because I was like, the Russos.
Looking they were doing at, stuff.
Their descent into slop. into the gray man or whatever.
At number five, Jonah, a VeggieTales movie.
Oh, sure. That's where they retell the story of Jonah with the VeggieTales.
Yeah, it's the first of two VeggieTales movies. And it now, focuses on compassion and mercy, according
were
to Wikipedia.
I was raised Jewish in the tri-state area, so I was not exposed to any... I've never seen a single second of a veggie tale. Have you ever been exposed to the veggies in their tales?
So what was wild to me is...
As someone from real America?
Yeah, exactly. I was exposed to it from a friend who... It was like the music from the show or the movies or whatever.
Yeah.
They have silly songs. I think that's literally like a running thing of like, they're silly, veggies, silly songs or something. And I later found out they were from VeggieTales. Like, I just thought they were funny songs.
Oh.
Almost like low rent, They Might Be Giants, I think maybe is how I think of it. Like, it's just weird and funny. And yeah, I was like, my stupid young mind thought that was good. But it was, but I never watched it. Even though I saw videotapes in our church, like Sunday school, but it's pretty low budget CGI.
It looks quite bad.
Yeah.
What I've seen from like the covers of the DVDs or whatever, the VHS tapes, they don't look good. Those veggies don't look rendered.
No.
Those veggies look like Crash Bandicoot's about to take a bite out of them.
Some wampa ass fruit. The funny thing to me about this, and this is something I learned about much more recently, is that Phil Vischer is one of the co-creators. He's also the voice of a bunch of the vegetables, including Bob the Tomato, who's on most of the covers.
Okay.
He's known as a woke evangelical because like around the Floyd protests, he posted a bunch about systemic racism. He even made a 17-minute video about systemic racism and was like calling out evangelicals like, we should care about this. Like, we should not ignore this. I'm not defending anything else he's said because he's an evangelical. He's probably has some fairly, I don't know, problematic views.
Sure.
But, you know, to give him credit, he's stood by this. He does a podcast, too.
Right.
It's kind of like trying to get pop culture talks from a Christian perspective, you know.
Okay. I respect it.
Yeah.
I respect the woke tomato.
The woke tomato. okay, finally, number one.
Yeah.
Red Dragon.
Oh, a movie that sucks.
I was going to say.
A movie that sucks is a completely unnecessary remake of a movie that fucks. Extremely.
Exactly. Okay.
Like, why would you remake Manhunter? When Manhunter exists, you dumb piece of shit, whoever, oh God, who made it again? It's
Brett Ratner,
the man himself. That's right. Man, those two other Hannibal movies they made. It's so funny because, like, Manhunter rips. Silence of the Lambs, I rewatched very recently. Fucks. Extremely.
Still great. Yes.
Hannibal, the show, great. Really, most of it's really good.
I'm glad you said the show. Yes.
Hannibal, the show. And then the two Ratner movies are so god-awful. And it's like, you got Tony back. You got Tony. You should be able to make something. You got Tony. You got... The painting, the Red Dragon, is cool. You got Do You See, the coolest monologue in history. Like, you got all this stuff.
The podcast
transformed.
For anyone who doesn't know.
Into me complaining about Brett Ratner.
This movie came out in 2002, but they made Silence of the Lambs in like 92, 91. That was the second book in a trilogy. Then they made Hannibal, third book, and the reason is because a different director and actors had made the first book. They didn't call it Red Dragon like the book. They called it Manhunter. And that was 1980-something?
Yeah.
And
the Michael Mann film is from the 80s, I believe.
Yes. And I was going to say, and it's Michael Mann. Michael freaking Mann. And
Michael Manhunter himself.
And I saw
1986.
Yeah. And the book was 81. So it was fairly quick turnaround.
Mm-hmm.
I saw the critics referring to this one as like better than Hannibal, but still not as good as Silence of the Lambs. And it's like, I mean, okay. Good job that you stepped over the Hannibal bar. No Jodie Foster either. So, you know.
Well, yeah. Well, she's not like, it's so funny because in the books, the main antagonist of Hannibal is Will Graham.
Mm-hmm.
And Will Graham, not in Silence of the Lambs, the film at all.
Exactly.
Just so strange.
It's very strange. Yeah. Still, great film. But the funny thing about this
rips
that I wanted to bring up is that because this talks about Manhunter so much,
mm-hmm.
I saw that movie, I think, my sophomore year of high school, because me and my friends made a like played it straight serial killer detective movie in high school.
Sick.
It's called Hush. And it was basically a ripoff of Manhunter. I mean, like, sure. The main detective is a, you know, his personal relationship is deteriorating with his wife. Our serial killer basically does a "Do you see" monologue.
Good.
We're all in high school, and somehow we got access to some like just costumes from the local university to do like cops and detectives and stuff. Mm. But it's all so ill-fitting. It's very goofy in retrospect. And we submitted this to our high school film festival. It just is so funny to think about the parents there who had to watch a couple shorts and, you know, high school quality filmmaking, mm-hmm. goofy, silly, stupid. They watched a 40 or maybe 20 minute long, like all the seniors in the school making a jokey spoof hangout movie called Pogs. And then they watched our 45 minute long, completely straight serial killer detective movie made by high schoolers. And I think that has to have been a trip for some people.
That's so, and the whole time they're going, is this Manhunter?
Exactly. Yeah. We just used movie from music from the movie. Like,
that's so funny. Did anybody eat a painting in your movie?
I'm trying to remember what the thing, like the weird thing our serial killer did, but I know he also put on like the thing over his head, the pantyhose.
Uh-huh.
Like it was not subtle what we were referencing.
That rocks. Well, the Tooth Fairy's legacy lives on to this day through the children.
Through the children.
That's true.
And that's the culture.
Okay. I'll take this. Here, thank you. Thank you, Science Officer Clayton. Say. And yeah, I guess like this episode was good. It was a good episode. What happened?
I pretty quickly wrote down like, why does this feel like a totally different creative team is making this?
It's because someone who had the writer of the episode was this guy, Michael Sussman, who is a Voyager alum.
Oh.
Who had just knew how to write an actual Star Wars thing. Star Wars. Oops.
Mm. Oop.
Trek. Yikes. And this episode was, of course, directed by Roxanne Dawson, B'Elanna Torres herself.
There we go. Okay.
From Voyager. So this is a Voyager collab. It's a very Voyager-y episode because they encounter like a mysterious thing that you're like, what the fuck was that?
Interesting. Okay. Because that's the other thing I felt about it is that I remembered watching this episode and that first run. And I know we both recently watched the whole thing. And this episode stood out to me as like the first time I thought, this is Enterprise. This is Star Trek Enterprise in a way that feels unique compared to others. But I haven't seen Voyager. That's my main like missing. Yeah,
Voyager is very different because Voyager, the whole conceit of it is like half the crew is like terrorists. It rocks. It's so like the conceit of Voyager is like half the crew is like Starfleet people and half the crew is the Maquis.
Right.
And they all have to learn to get along. And it fucking rips. It's so
good.
And
they're way, way far away from any help.
Yeah, like Voyager gets a bad rap, but it's actually, I think, when it's good, it's quite good. Like, it is, its good episodes are as good as, like, good episodes of Next Gen. In my opinion, they still don't touch the beautiful high highs of Deep Space Nine. The best Star Trek show in the world that I love. Okay, so I'll take us into this episode. It's called Dead Stop. So it's been 4 days since we got some serial storytelling. It's been four days since the last episode.
Precisely 4 days.
When they got their ship all fucked up and they need some tritanium alloy or something. Trip's all like, the ship is all goofed up. All we can do is warp 2, which is a decade of travel away from Jupiter Station. The subspace antenna's goofed. All they have is shortwave communication. Archer's like, send out a general distress signal. Because we've helped enough people in the last year.
Yeah.
And it'll pay forward. And he's like, Sato, send out a general distress call. And that's all we get for the cold open.
And this is already a little bit of this, like, to me, enterprise-ness of it, of like,
yeah, they feel like they're out in the middle of nowhere. Yeah, exactly. They can't call anybody. There's no like alliances like outside of the Vulcans. It feels like, oh, like it is legitimately like, oh man, this would be scary. You're like out in the middle of nowhere. Mm-hmm. You just have this horrible encounter with these like scary, hairy shirt wearing motherfuckers with their big shoulders. Uh-huh. And their big eyebrows. So we get back, we get our beautiful song that I love so much. Mm-hmm. And then we open on Phlox and he's doing PT with Malcolm. And I love this exchange so much because Malcolm is like, are you allowed to hurt me this much? And Phlox is like, well, I can't harm you, but I can inflict as much pain as I like. I love him so much. And then he's like, hey, it would actually be easier if I just put a bunch of worms on you. And Malcolm's like, the last worm you put on me has still not exited my body. And he's like, Phlox is like, it'll come out on his own eventually.
Eventually.
There's a lot of Phlox in this episode, and he's on fire. He's like,
there was something about just this little dialogue interchange. Just like, how have we had so few of these moments that it feels like two characters have done other things and had a history and they like have a little fun interaction about it?
I will say this, the same writer, this guy, Michael Sussman, also is responsible for like every Enterprise episode that is considered good. He also did the two-parter Mirror Universe Enterprise episodes, which are good.
Hell yes.
Like he is the one that is like, every time there's a good Enterprise episode, it's this guy. So like, a temporal culture war salute to Michael Sussman, but also like boo, because it gives me less to complain and yell about on my comedy show. So the Tellarites show up. You might remember the Tellarites from other Star Treks as being weird pigmen. They always have freighters. It's always a Tellarite freighter.
Yes.
Tellarites are here and they can't really, the communication's all fucked up and they're just like, here's coordinates for a repair station. It's 2 days away at warp two. Like, okay. Mm-hmm. So they go there, they go to the station. They kind of skip over the 2 days, but they get there and Archer's like, hey station, what's up? And they don't respond. And there's no biosigns. And the atmosphere is liquid helium and it's 270 degrees below zero, which... Mm-hmm. They're probably talking Celsius, and absolute zero is 273, I think, negative. So it's basically uninhabitable for people.
Yeah.
And it also doesn't fit the Enterprise, the station.
Yeah.
And no one responds, but all of a sudden the station, it reconfigures and it fits the Enterprise and the atmosphere changes to oxygen, but there's still nobody responding.
And there's a cool little thing right before that where like they're all just kind of sitting there on the bridge and suddenly the whole room glows bright white. Yeah. It kind of feels like they were affected physically by something, mm-hmm. but it's very weird and mysterious. And then I think T'Pol's like, we were just molecularly scanned.
Yes.
And then the station like kicks into action doing all this reconfiguration for
it's
them.
Cool. But still nobody responds. But they're just like, I guess we'll just go in.
Yeah, I guess, so, you know, seems like an invitation.
Trip, Archer, and T'Pol go in, and there's like a Star Wars ass hallway, I will say. Mm-hmm. And there's a 3D like holographic model of the Enterprise and the station.
I also thought it was kind of Star Warsy. Okay.
It's a Star Wars ass hallway. It looks like the hallway in the freighter in the beginning of the first Star Wars.
Oh, the Tantive.
Yeah. Sure. And there's like a 3D model of the Enterprise, like a hologram, and it's got every single thing wrong with it, including like a little red dot, including some chip paint that Trip hasn't gotten around to yet. And everything's in English. And there's even a diagram of Malcolm's fucked up leg from the previous episode.
Yeah, and I'll say the English thing is interesting to me because it's like, does the translator do something about that? Does there something, like, they don't really talk about not being able to read alien language, but
well,
anyway.
The translation on the show is fucked and they don't care about it until they do. But a robot voice kicks on and it's like, please select a method of compensation to begin your repair process. Mm-hmm. And Archer's doing the thing like when you're on the phone with your bank and you're yelling, agent, agent.
Yeah.
And like tapping zero.
David, I was going to make that joke later.
All I can think about is Frances McDormand in Burn After Reading going, agent, agent. She says it so beautifully. Anyways, it seems like the whole station's automated of some way. And they're like, okay.
Whenever they ask it a question, it just responds like, what is the thing it says?
Like a query not recognized or whatever.
Yes. Yeah, yeah.
And they agreed to trade the station some warp plasma. And the station
they
is like...
They give them three jargon choices and they pick the jargon that they say is the easiest to give up.
Yeah, like, the other one is like hardware that they cannot replace. Yeah.
Exactly.
And this is like, oh, it's like goo. We got some goo on board. That's our onboard goo. And that's fine.
Yep.
And the station is like, the repairs will take 34 hours. And Trip is like, whoa, that it would be 3 months at Jupiter Station. And a bunch of robot arms get to work, and the ship calls them and is like, hey, are there robot arms? And Archer's like, yeah, those are mine. Don't worry about
don't
it.
Don't worry.
Don't worry about the arms. Not yet. And then the computer is like, the recreation facility is now open to all personnel, and the door opens and we go to commercial. And I did not remember this episode. Mm. I don't know why. I think because so much happens on the show after this. So I was like trying to remember what it was, but I'm just like, but like, you know, I've seen enough Star Trek in my life and I'm like,
I have suspicions.
Like, hey, like, what's the problem? What's the problem going to be, Mr. Episode? Like, there's going to be a problem episode. Tell me what the problem is now, please. Because now I know there's going to be a problem. Just tell me there's a problem.
Yes. And I know that was my feeling the first time. And there's something about this one that stood out to me, which is why I pretty much remember the plot line. But they set it up mysteriously. Everything about this still feels like, okay. Yeah.
And they roll it out.
Something's off. What is it?
Yeah. And they do a really good job of rolling it out in a way that is interesting, which is hard as fuck to do. As we've seen evidenced by this exact show.
Exactly.
And all the times they do it badly. But they go into like a weird cafeteria looking space and there's a replicator on the table. And T'Pol, because she's boring, gets an ice water. And Trip is like, give me a pan-fried catfish because that's my character trait. but they give him a catfish and he's like, it's not bad. And they just eat it and drink it, which is crazy to me. But
to me, yes, I also thought that. But and they're like, oh, that was, how did it know what a catfish was? Well, it's in our computer database. So it's also scanning our database.
Yeah, and Archer is like, would have been nice to know what they know.
He's getting a little suspicious now.
Yeah, he's a little suspicious. Back on the Enterprise, the robot arms are getting to work and a weird little device is blasting Malcolm with like a healing beam.
I did like this nod, though, that the specific way it's repairing so fast is it's literally using replicators. Like, it's destroying garbage and, like, creating a new wall panel. And, like, they didn't have to explain to me how that worked, but I appreciate it. Yeah, it all kind of like, connects together.
Yeah, and T'Pol is like, I've seen something like this on a ship of the Goobledygook fleet. The fleet or whatever. Like, and she's like, I don't know, I saw this before. And it's like, okay, it's a matter replicator. Mm-hmm. Like, this is clearly where they get the idea. Sure. Neat. Thank you. Like decent prequel-y kind of things that are not super annoying.
Yes.
And Phlox is like, damn, I want one of those healing beam things. And it vanishes after it's done. And Malcolm is healed. The scar on his leg is even gone. He can walk around no pain. But back in Archer's office, he's very skeptical of what's going on because he has clearly seen an episode of the show Star Trek. and he's like talking about how there used to be a squeaky floor plate. And it's even that's fixed. And then he explains to T'Pol the concept of gremlins.
Yeah, I wanted to give a nod to like, that the scene where he, I don't know, foreshadows the squeaky plate is a scene with Porthos where they do a fun little like low angle shot where Porthos is basically like dominating the frame. So it's because it's about Porthos.
Yeah.
And, you know, he's complaining about that. He's barking because there's a squeak in the floor. So then later here, that's also fixed. And he's like, this is too good to be true, basically.
Yeah.
We're paying way too little. We're getting such a good deal. Something about this doesn't smell right. And T'Pol's just kind of like, not every species is as selfish as humans.
That's right.
Which, I mean, fair, but I also,
have
you never watched an episode of Star Trek?
It also feels convenient. It's my literal one, like, don't know about that in the episode, is that T'Pol is not more skeptical as Mrs. Logic, you know?
I mean, it's also like they busted up their ship and then the next episode to not have to deal with that issue anymore, they literally have a magic repair station. This episode's so good that that's, I don't think, really a fair complaint.
No, but like, it's not.
This is a bit more of a writing issue. It's like, T'Pol's smarter than this.
Yeah, like that's the only thing that I'm really, in this episode, that really grabbed me as like, hey. And it was back on the station. The whole crew has gone there and they're pigging out on cool replicated food. And Trip is like, this computer is so good. I bet you wouldn't even need a tactical officer or a chief engineer if we had this kind of computer. And Malcolm's like, a ship without a tactical officer, which is kind of funny because no other ship has a tactical officer, I don't think. Well, no, that's not true. There's all sorts of tactical officers.
Don't they call them like security?
Yeah, they do. Because I think what they're saying is that like the computer figures out what kind of maneuvers to do.
Sure.
In the later ships. But Trip is like, I found where the central computer is and I want to go sneak around and like, go look at it.
Also, it's way, way smaller than it should be for such a powerful computer.
Yeah, he's like way too small, and that's very strange.
Which to him, he's mostly just curious about. It's not reading to him yet as like suspicious.
No. But it is like, let's go in this duct. And it's a really funny bit where like this episode production wise is actually pretty good.
Right.
Except for when they go into this duct work, because what they do is remove a HEPA filter. to get into it.
I didn't think about that.
And it's just like straight up like a Happy Belter they bought from Sears. Like you just see them. It's so funny to me. Back on the Enterprise, Archer, you're in
at least the one fun thing about that sequence is that when they are about to, they think, get to the computer room, the station detects them.
Oh, I'm getting there. I'm going in the order of the scenes of the episode, Clayton.
Oh,
sorry. It's okay. There's a very quick interlude where you see Travis in his room, and Archer tells him to go down to the launch bay, even though it's off limits. We go back to the duct.
Thank you.
Then an alarm goes off, and Trip and Malcolm are just like teleported back to the bridge of the Enterprise, and T'Pol's standing there like, the fuck are you guys doing?
Because they're still on all fours, like they're in a duct. It's very funny.
It's very funny. In the launch bay, Travis gets there and Archer is not there. And that, there's like a sparking like comms panel or like an EPS grid panel or whatever the fuck that thing is. And then back in Archer's office where Archer actually is, Trip and Reed are getting reamed out and like they're grounded, you know, frowny face.
Yes.
Archer's like, did you see? But Archer stops yelling at them. He's like, well, did you see anything interesting in there?
Yeah.
And Malcolm's about to say, but then he is summoned by T'Pol to the launch bay where Phlox is treating Mayweather, who is dead.
Dun, dun, dun.
Act break.
And like you said about this being an episode that actually makes you wonder what's going to happen next.
Yeah. Yeah.
Both the call that is just like interspersed in there of Archer calling Travis, you don't think anything of it.
No.
Like he's just like, hey, come down here. Travis, like, I thought that was off limits. And he's like, not anymore. I need you to talk about something. It's like, okay.
And you think it's because Archer has like figured something out.
Exactly. You kind of have a reason to not think too much into it. And then when you have Archer there dressing down Trip and Malcolm, you're like, wait a minute. He's supposed to be in the. And then, of course, Travis is dead. And
Travis is dead.
Not too long from now, they make it pretty clear that he's not actually dead. But
no, it takes a while.
I kind of feel bad that, like, of all the characters they could have picked who could have died early in the series and been replaced, they have given him the least.
Yeah.
It feels, unfortunately, like he's the most plausible for them to do a, like, let's try someone new.
Oh, see, to me.
And so it's weirdly believable.
Yeah. Well, to me, I had a different reaction, which is that. Mm-hmm. He dies and I'm like, well, there's no way he's dead. Mm-hmm. But like, what I'm curious is how is he going to come back to life or what's like there is, this is part of the mystery.
Yes.
And he's not just dead. I don't think.
I think it's also partly that following this, we start getting these scenes of basically people just being sad he's gone. And it felt like, are they actually, did he? Like it, I know most of the time you don't believe someone's dead on a Star Trek show.
Yeah.
But it has happened.
It has happened.
To a main cast member. So it's not out of the realm of possibility to a point where, you know, to this episode's credit, I feel like the writers identified who they could do this with and how it might work to set you up for a little bit, for a couple minutes to actually think someone's dead.
Yeah. But Phlox is like, he was shocked and burned to death. They got to do an autopsy. Mm-hmm. Trip is like, it looks like he was trying to tap into the EPS grid and it overloaded, which is like a frame up clearly. Because when he got down there, that's what the thing was like sparking.
Yeah, so Archer, we know it's suspicious.
Yeah, and Archer is pissed because he thinks it was like a discipline issue. Because he's like, no one was supposed to be down here.
Yeah.
Archer goes back to the station and he's like, you killed my dude. He's yelling agent again. He's trying to speak to the manager. He's punching the fucking machine.
This is where I said, me pressing zero and over again until I get agent.
Yeah. And the station goes, any damage to the station will be charged to your vessel. It's really funny. It's Archer's like stuck in the chair company. It's really good.
Yep.
So back on the Enterprise, Phlox is doing the autopsy. Hoshi comes by to say goodbye to Travis and tells this like sweet story about how like he always would prank her and he like tried to get her to try and translate a bowl of strawberry jello.
Uh-huh.
And like convincing her it was like a life form. And then like, you know, they're commiserating about Travis in like kind of a sweet way. Mm-hmm. And Phlox just like looks at the screen and goes, wait, they're dead. All of them. And you're like, what is he fucking talking about?
What?
We go back to Malcolm. Now, Malcolm's like at a computer in Travis's room. And he's like, it doesn't seem like Travis used the comm system at all. And Archer, and Malcolm's like looking at a letter that Travis's like sister sent. Archer is like guilty for skipping breakfast with him the previous week. Yeah. And like, we got to figure out a way to get in touch with his parents. But it's hard because they're on a freighter. Like, it's all very like a little soapy, like drama stuff. And then Phlox hails Archer and he's like, come down to the medical bay. This is not Travis. It's a duplicate, like a remarkable duplicate.
Uh-huh.
And he only knows because they like had to vaccinate the crew against some flu,
Rigelian,
whatever fever. The fuck. he had, and the microbes should be alive still.
Uh-huh.
But they're dead in Travis, and they actually thrive on the kind of electricity that he got that shocked
supposedly
with.
Killed him.
So they should be bigger, if anything.
Yeah, or there should be way more of them. And so at this point, Archer basically says it can replicate just about any machinery, but it can't make a single cell life form. Or maybe Phlox says that.
Yeah.
But, so they've identified, it replicated a body. And I think this, I guess it has been established in Star Trek that you can't replicate living life forms.
Yeah, you cannot replicate something into being alive. You can only replicate matter. You can only rearrange, like, they're Legos.
Yeah.
But you can't make them move around. You can't Frankenstein it completely. So Archer, like, tells Trip to, like, stop repairing the canisters of warp plasma that he was going to bring over, because clearly he's got some plan that you don't know. They do a version of the, like, I got a plan. They go, pss, 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 pss.
Yeah.
So back on the station, Trip is there with the plasma, but he starts telling the ship that the work is shoddy and not up to spec. And the station keeps saying, like, put the payment on this pad. And Trip is like, I'm not paying you until we sort it out.
He cranks up the dial on his southern accent, and what guarantee do I have that these Durania pins won't fly out the first time we go to warp?
It's really funny. I'm just a country space mechanic. meanwhile, Archer and T'Pol and Malcolm are getting back in that duct, and Trip is like yelling, "The customer is always right. And how do I file a grievance?" It's really, he's trying to speak to a manager. Malcolm in the duct shows Archer and T'Pol where the alarm set them off, which is right in front of this like little sphincter looking door.
Yeah.
And he goes and sets it off, and he's transported away. Archer and T'Pol like scan when he's getting transported to like see where the transporter is coming from, and they shoot it clearly, like disabling the transporter in the area.
Yes.
Go back to Trip. He runs away from the plasma. T'Pol shoots the door in the duct, opening the little sphincter.
Uh-huh.
And they go inside the duct, and they leave. They get into the supercomputer room.
And before you get there, I just wanted to give a little nod to like,
yeah,
just that little sequence of them trying to get through the duct.
Yeah.
No dialogue, basically.
Very good visual storytelling. I actually noticed
exactly.
This too.
The whole
thing
you laid out is just communicated by the actions they take and what they do in response to other things, and where it's completely clear what they did without a line of dialogue, which is impressive for the show.
It's impressive for the show. It's not a line of dialogue. It's well directed. It's well written. And it's like, it establishes how this thing works very quickly and economically, and I was just very impressed by it.
Yeah.
And it gives me less to yell about on my show where I yell about Star Trek.
Yeah.
But it's fine. Anyways, they get in the supercomputer room, and it's the fucking Matrix in there.
Yeah.
There's just like a bunch of like humanoids in beds unconscious, and they're wired up to something, and an alarm is going off.
It also felt a bit like a X-Files scene where they find like a bunch of bodies or something.
Yeah, very much so. And an alarm is going off saying, get the fuck out of our room or we'll kill your ship. And T'Pol's doing scans. She's like, the bodies are all technically alive, but it looks like neurologically they've been integrated into the computer core.
Yeah, basically all the other ones are so far gone, let's not worry if they die.
Yeah, basically. And they find within this room, they find Travis. And back on Enterprise, some robot arms have clamped onto the ship, and they start like overriding its computer. Uh-huh. And Malcolm and Hoshi are like,
Oh no.
Oh no.
They say a bunch of jargon, but basically, they're getting hacked.
They're like the ship is being hacked completely. On the station, Archer and T'Pol bust out Travis. They bring him back to the Enterprise, and they leave him in the sick bay with Phlox. But the ship is like failing big time. Archer gets back on the bridge, and he tells Trip to time to deliver the payment. It's a good line. And he sets off the warp plasma. Canisters are clearly filled with some sort of explosive that makes the warp plasma burn. And Malcolm's like, this isn't working very well. And Archer's like, be patient. The plasma needs to reach 3,000 degrees, which is where I wrote, warp plasma can't melt station beams.
Thank you for that. I just kind of thought about it, but I didn't write it down.
Uh-huh.
I'm glad.
But is that what they're referencing? It's very bizarre.
You think that's what they're referencing?
I don't know. I don't know. But it is weird for them to take a second, a beat in the episode to be like,
you know,
the fuel's not hot enough to melt this station. And then one guy goes like, it'll get hot enough, don't worry.
So, okay. There is something a little odd about like why it's Archer who knows that. If anyone knows that, it should be Trip. But
that's right.
I think I thought of it as sort of like they didn't plan this bomb ahead of time. The station had asked for fuel, and it's like, we know it won't work as a bomb, but it will get very hot and cause the rest of the station to explode.
For the mechanics of how the episode, for the mechanics of how the episode is going, it needs to slowly explode, not quickly. So the ship comes back online because a bunch of the station has exploded, but one arm is still locked on the hole, and they launch a couple of torpedoes, and they zip in to break the arm off, and they zip out of there. And the station explodes, and you're like, wait, I guess all those other people just died.
Yeah, they made it clear they didn't count. It's okay.
Yeah, and the sick bay, Travis is okay and awake, and Phlox is like, okay. There's a chip that was on Travis, and it was using his brain to enhance its processing power. And everyone's like, what? And T'Pol is like, yeah, the cerebral cortex is the most sophisticated computer in the world. And I'm like, are we sure about that?
I literally wrote the exact same thing. I was like, really? Is that true?
In the future? You have a spaceship that can go faster than the speed of light, and you're telling me the cerebral cortex is a better computer than a computer? That's not true. It's very like Dune. It's very like the most powerful thing is a Mentat. The other people that were like, they were too damaged, I guess. They don't count. Mm-hmm. And Archer goes to Travis and he's like, I'll see you at breakfast, baby. And Travis gives him a big smile.
What a nice ending.
Or is it?
What?
Because back at the remains of the station, Clayton, it starts repairing itself. The end. Question mark? Exclamation point?
I don't think they ever come back to it, but I love that.
It feels like you're like, oh, are you seeing the beginning of the Borg? Maybe. But it never goes like, and here's the Borg, which is cool and good. But it feels very like, oh, is this like how the Borg started? Is some computer just figured out that it could like enslave people?
Exactly. Like it, or like the reason it's empty and it doesn't have makers is that at a certain point it got rid of them or didn't need them anymore.
Yeah, or it was made to be
functioning on its own.
Or it was made to be automated and like it gained sentience and it then started pulling in organic matter to help it do better calculations. And then it was like, wait, I'll make a whole race of robot people. Like, that's what it feels like to me because the piece that Phlox showed off looked a little like plausibly Borgish.
Yeah.
But not in a way that was too obvious. And it may not be true. I may be spitballing. Wait. I don't know if there's a better canonical explanation for the Borg and where they come from, what they're doing. Because they're in the other quadrant.
They're in the other quadrant. I just remembered. I think we get a Borg appearance late in this series.
Do we? Okay, maybe I'm wrong. But it feels,
I think.
Anyways, it's cool as hell. They never come back to it, but not in a way where it's like, what happened to that?
Well, because it's like, this episode also is just a fun, like, little sci-fi story.
It's a monster of the week, baby.
And it is fun if you're just like, actually, it's still out there.
Yeah, like, and there's just like this like trap for ships that are hurt.
And something we didn't actually, I guess, specify is that rough communication they got, they actually say like, we didn't get much from it, but we just got like
coordinates,
repair station and coordinates.
They might have been saying, don't go there.
Don't go to this repair station, whatever you do. They might have.
Maybe
the station had some way to like hack and be like, I don't know. But there's fun implications to this episode that I like.
Yeah, but it's like, oh, they'll repair your ship and at the cost of one crewman. Right?
Exactly. Like, I mean, they just said that straight up. Like, oh, yeah, but the actual, just heads up, the actual cost is a random crew member.
Yeah. It's the button from Button, the play and Twilight Zone episode. Or the short story, yeah. Anyways, that's the end of the episode part of the episode.
It is. And this is the end of the episode podcast episode.
How do we end this? I recorded my other show today also. And very suddenly I'm like, how do we end these episodes?
I think one of us just eventually is like, this has been Temporal Culture War.
This has been Temporal Culture War. I've been Maddie Lopchansky.
And I've been Clayton Ashley.
Thank you for listening. We have a Patreon, temporalculturewar.com.
Head to the URL.
Head to the URL in the show notes. That's also there. It's $1 a month. And we've sort of settled into talking about contemporaneous movies with the show. We haven't figured out what this month is going to be yet, but we'll do one.
I think, unfortunately, it might be Nemesis.
It might be Star Trek Nemesis.
Because I think that comes out in December.
Well, I think
2002.
I think what I'll be doing is watching Star Trek Nemesis and blowing my brains out live on a podcast, which I don't know if anyone's ever done before. So, Clayton, I'm going to leave a set of keys under my front mat so you can come over to my house and stop Audacity after I kill myself on air.
Dark.
Is that a fun way to the end of the episode?
It could be.
Is that a fun way?
Well, we have the thing we always say at the end.
Oh, yeah. And as always.
As always.
Let's go.
Let's go. He's never going to say it again, is he?
He's never, ever going to say it.